Live from the HananiaAutos.com studio.
Live.
This is the Gus Bradley Show.
Gus Bradley Show.
Jaguars head coach Gus Bradley and former Jaguar Jeff Loggeman are brought to you by Ticket Exchange and by Everbank. The Gus Bradley Show begins right now.
And welcome in. Jeff Loggeman here, joined by the head coach for the Gus Bradley Show each and every week at this time. And but this time is a little bit different. A lot of people would say that the future is now and the Blake Bortles era has officially started. And Gus, is it the Blake Bortles era beginning, or do you kind of say, okay, wait a minute now, this is team Jaguars, team?
Well, I think it is team. I know people are excited about Blake, and it's more so just to see when he gets his opportunity to perform, how is he going to perform and what's going to take place. But, you know, he's done a great job. I really enjoyed watching his progress from OTAs or from the time we drafted him till now. And, you know, he's got another chapter in his career. But the whole team, I think, it feels that it's been a different week this week. You know, I know Wednesday's practice, there's a little more intensity to it, and it carried over in today. So, you know, I think overall the feel is more, hey, we got to get this right, not so much Blake's the quarterback.
You talked right then about how where he has come from. I'm going to take you back all the way to the OTAs and the minicamp. What were your thoughts about Blake Bortles at that point? Because with my eyes, I was going, uh-oh, he's got a long way to go.
Well, I think for me it was, you know, I've had a chance to visit with him and knew him. And, you know, you see so many young guys go in and get their opportunity and right away. And, you know, I'm sure they want to perform really well, and you see a little bit of anxiety. So, you know, I just took it in as, you know what, this is what generally happens with rookies. But just how fast he progressed, you know, when he got into training camp. You know, you saw a different person. I think he really adjusted to the culture very well.
How has he handled the week so far? Because you know, you're talking a young guy, and people sometimes forget that coming out of the University of Central Florida, he's a junior, right, coming out?
Yep.
And so he's a young guy. What does he have, 30-something starts, I think, at the University of Central Florida? So not great experience, but it seems like he's handling it very well.
He really has. You know, and that's what our hope was really to, you know, let him be in a culture, an environment, where all he had to worry about was just getting better and really knocking out some of his weaknesses in his game, and then learning how to be a pro, learning how to study, learn lessons from Chad and our coaching staff, and just continue to grow. And we just felt like, last week's time, I was sitting there watching him in practice and talked to our offensive staff, and it just felt like, okay, I don't know when it's going to be, but he feels ready for the next opportunity.
Your most important decision that you've ever made as a head coach? I mean, from the outside looking in, and I mean, there's a lot of decisions that you have to make as a head coach. But the simple fact is that the quarterback position is the most important position on any level of football for a football team. Do you look at it that way, or do you just say, hey, this is just one of many decisions that I have had to make?
Well, we understand it. It is, you know, the position itself, you know, a lot of responsibility. But, you know, I do look at it as a responsibility to the team, to the organization, to our fans, to put out a really good competitive team. And so it was just another decision that led into that. Although it's, you know, maybe a higher profile position. But once the decision was made, you know, we've had to make a lot of tough decisions. And, you know, you just go with it. And but it is exciting.
When did you know? You know, the game is kind of going on against Indianapolis. Did you make your mind up on the way to the tunnel at halftime? Was it throughout the course of the first half where you said, okay, hey, look, we get to halftime, we've got to do something different? Is that something you care to share?
Yeah, you know, no, I'll share. I think it was, you know, my conversation with Chad was, hey, you know that here on out, I don't know when it's going to take place, that, you know, we want you to have a chance to be successful. Let's go into each and every game where you're, you know, really trying to capture this team and really lead this team. I said there might be a situation where you're doing well, but maybe the team is struggling, where we have to make a change. And I don't know where that is, but I just want to be upfront and honest with you. And Chad was great, and I just felt at that time, you know, it was time that, you know, regardless of how Chad was doing, I just felt like we needed it as a team.
I give Chad a lot of credit because after the game, went up to him for post-game radio and just said, hey, Chad, will you come on? You know, a lot of guys at you know, post-game radio, you know, they just got taken out of the lineup, you know, and a rookie gets put in to take their spot, probably wouldn't be so gracious. And he said, absolutely. And came on and was great.
Yeah, he incredible person, incredible. I mean, this whole process, he's really helped me and our staff, just how he handled it. So, you know, we have a saying where I'm from, up in North Dakota, because we were the Bison, that the Bison always face the storm. And you know what? In its own ways, this was a little bit of a storm, and Chad faced it. And he, you know, he knew that there was going to be some questions that need to be answered, and he addressed it. And you know, you just hold him in high regard.
When you commit to a young quarterback like that, did you, in that whole decision, did you ever lean on maybe somebody else, you know, maybe a Pete Carroll or another coach that you had experience with, or another coach at maybe in a different sport, or anybody to, because, you know, just to maybe get some input, some valued advice maybe of how to handle this? And I'm not talking about just last week. I'm talking about throughout, you know, since the draft.
No, I think, you know, Dave and I have had multiple conversations. You know, this started when we were going to draft a quarterback. How do we handle it? You know, what's our intentions? How do we want to go about this to give us the best opportunity for him to be successful? And so, you know, we had a plan, and we put it together. And I really didn't share it with any of our offensive coaches because I wanted their complete focus on helping Chad and our, you know, our offense get better. And, you know, I didn't want to distract them. And I just said, hey, when the time is right, we'll let you know. And, you know, maybe conversations how each guy is doing. But I really thought that if we stay true to this, it will just happen, you know, and you just trust your instincts. And, you know, I had that visit after the Washington game with both of them, and I felt like, okay, I'm at peace with it. Now, anytime that it happens, you know, we'll be ready to move on.
You made two changes along the offensive line going into last week's game. You inserted Luke Bowenko in at center, Sam Young at right tackle. You made the move, Cam Bradfield, he was released. Look, I know a lot of people wanted to kind of down the whole process, but I'm watching the film on Monday and Tuesday, and I said this on Tuesday. I saw improvement. I saw a young center that I think that can make blocks that a lot of other guys athletically can't do, getting to the second level as well. And I saw a guy battling in Sam Young, big, strong, long guy. And I think that offensive line got better.
Yeah, we believe that as a staff. I think, you know, we know at times it's going to take some time. But, you know, the progress that we made and to see it elevated like it did last week in the run game, I think is beneficial. And I think us as a coaching staff, you saw some unique runs that would, you know, take some of the pressure off the offensive line and be more creative. And I think, you know, you have to have a core philosophy. But overall, I think, you know, they did a really good job. And we just feel like, all right, now this week, let's get even more better. And, you know, sometimes it doesn't show up in the rushing yards. But when you watch the tape, like you said, you see them work to the second level. They're hanging on the double teams longer. The zone blocking scheme's better. And you just say, okay, that's starting to look even better, you know, more like football.
I'm going to bring up a specific play. Yeah, because I actually am using this for Film Room Friday on Jaguars.com. It's going to be on the website tomorrow. And it was a block in which Luke Bowenko made, and I want to make sure I put this disclaimer out there. I'm from Virginia. He's from Virginia. That doesn't change my opinion of him at all. Okay, just because somebody went to, you know, North Dakota and is a member of the Bison doesn't mean they're any better, right?
North Dakota State.
North Dakota State, NDSU, okay, in Fargo. But when I saw him make a block in which Josh McNary, the linebacker, walked up into an A-gap, as an A-gap blitzer, and Luke Bowenko was able to laterally move his body and get to the side of McNary and then rotate his hips around and wall him off immediately to where Denard Robinson, D-Rob, had a running lane, that impressed the heck out of me.
Yeah, that, you know, that's one of his traits. That's what we liked about him in training camp was his athleticism. And, you know, in our blocking scheme, the zone blocking scheme, it's not the same as if you were, you know, truly a gap team or a power team. You're looking for that athleticism, a guy that can, you know, move well, get up to the second level. And, you know, that's the traits that Luke had. That's why I think we're really pleased to have him, fortunate to get him. And then to see him come back from his injury where he had a chance to implement him was good.
Yeah, I want to give credit to David Caldwell's staff. because Luke Bawenko, first of all, athletically, he's very gifted. But if you look at his body of work at the University of Virginia, he was moved around all over the place. I mean, played guard, played center, and sometimes two different positions in the same game. It's not like he was settled in at center, and you had this big body of work to evaluate. So for the scouts to be able to look at him and say, center, that's pretty good.
Yeah, and I think, you know, give credit to George Yarno and Luke Butkus, and, you know, they saw some of the traits that he had as well. So, you know, and that's how we operate as an organization. We take the information with the scouts, the coaches, and try to make the best decision for the team. So to get him at that spot and then help him perform, you know, he's still young, though. I mean, he's, you know, I think he's going to, you know, that arrow is definitely up for him. And, you know, we're excited about seeing his growth as well.
This week with Austin Pasdor practicing, okay, last week he practiced a little bit. If he plays, he probably would have to play with a club. Do you envision him being ready to play this week at San Diego?
Well, I know it's frustrating for him because he, you know, with his wind and you know, getting some reps, he feels really good. So it's the club part of it. We just have to take a look at that. And I know that, you know, our hopes is that relatively soon at least he can, you know, get some of that club off. And when that time comes, we don't know. But, you know, guys have performed with that. So we'll take a look at our active list and see the numbers that we have up. And just, you know, it'd be nice to be able to hold off again for him, to get him to where he's fully confident in using that. But, you know, we'll see.
There was a couple play stretch in that game against Indianapolis where Sam Young has a helmet equipment issue. And so he's off the field. There goes running Joshua, his undrafted free agent rookie from James Madison. He gets into the huddle. He has to play right tackle for a snap, maybe two. I can't remember exactly what it was. And I'm looking on the field, and, you know, you've got Allen Robinson and Allen Hurns. And I think this was early in the game, so I think it was actually before that Blake Bortles had come in. But the whole right side of the offensive line was all rookie.
Yeah.
I mean, wow.
Yeah, no, it is. You know, and see, we look at it as this is exciting. I mean, it's really exciting for our franchise, and we've got some good young players, and they're athletic players. And, you know, they just were trying to build their body of work so they have past experiences to go off of. And there's a lot of things that are new to them right now. But what I love about them is how competitive they are. And we talk about a relentless offensive line. You know, that's what they're trying to be. And they're working really hard to it. And you saw flashes of it. And when you see flashes, you celebrate that. And then just, you know, keep going in that direction. And, you know, hopefully we see that consistent play.
Could you get a little help to that offensive line with Clay Harbor possibly being available this week?
Yeah, he's really practiced well, you know, and to come back from the injury, you know, some of the conditioning things are an aspect that you look at. But I give credit to Milo and Scott, you know, our trainers and strength staff. They've done a great job bringing him back. So that transition has worked out really well. After today's practice, he felt really good.
A lot of people want to kind of pigeonhole him into an H-back, you know, quote unquote. You know, the move tight end, he's not real physical. I go all the way back to training camp, and you probably remember the play where Clay Harbor and Big Red Bryant almost went to fisticuffs when they were going against each other in practice because Clay Harbor was being very physical.
You know what? He's really improved that part of his game. I think when he came in here, you know, that's what he was seeing as an H. But, you know, Ron Middleton did a good job challenging him. Clay accepted the challenge, and, you know, he has become a better blocker. And fortunately for us, you know, now we need him as both a Y and an H.
All right, we come back here on the Gus Bradley Show. We're going to talk a little Chargers defense right after this with the head coach. And you're listening to the Gus Bradley Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
Jaguar fans, do what you want for your photo, or you can tweet on the massive new Jaguar video boards, hashtag JagsGameDayLive, and be a part of the game experience, the social drive, brought to you by the Nimnick family of dealerships. So I can tweet now? Is that what it is? Okay. You know, that as part of this little promotion here, I was convinced today to get on Twitter from the sponsorship folks here on the Jaguars. And I have no idea how that all works, so I'm learning. Okay? So I'm learning. And do you have a Twitter account? You do, right?
No,
you've had
right.
one for like 10 years
no.
now? For real.
Logs, you changed, man. This is good. this is a good move for you.
When the boss says, hey, we really need you to do this for one of these promotions, I'm like, okay, I got to do it, right? What is it, that term grit, you know? Yeah. Grit, which means being consistent and doing what's asked of you every day. You use that terminology a lot, right?
Yeah, we talk about grit with our players.
Okay. What does that mean to your players?
Well, you know what? I think you look at it, and I'll give you an example. A player comes in, he gets ready for his week of practice, and he's all excited. It's the first week or first game of the season, and maybe he goes in, does extensive studying on tape, and does, you know, his workouts, and he's really detailed, and goes out and plays really well. But then it's the second and the third and the fourth and the fifth game, and maybe he's not as pays attention to detail like he did his first game. And it can kind of slide away. So grit is that consistency, you know, doing it every day for long periods of time. You develop grit, and it's actually something that people study, and they think you can create, and that in interviews you can talk to people that have grit. And it's really interesting, and we challenge our guys on that. Since some of our players are young and going through it for the first time, we challenge them to have that grit to do it day after day.
Do your young wide receivers have grit?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's a great group now. I mean, bright-eyed. Cecil's just been so big for those guys. And you can tell now that he's back in the lineup that they really respond to him. Jerry Sullivan, I mean, just the progress. A guy like Allen Robinson has made. You know, you look at, you know, he's only had, I don't know, 3 weeks of practice or whatever the case. But, he really pays attention to details, listens to the teachings of Jerry, and, has really come along since his first game that he played to where he was last week.
I don't know if you put a specific number on the mental errors at Washington on the wide receiving group. But without getting into specifics, percentage-wise, how did the mental errors go from Washington to Indianapolis? Did it decrease 50%, 75%? Did it go up?
No, I don't know. It went down over 50%. So it was really a good sign. I think our players really were locked in. And, they're constantly working. You know, Allen Robinson told me today, I'm working on, my releases versus tight coverage. That's really what I wanted to tackle today. You know, and then tomorrow it'll be something else. And that's how it should be. To go in there, you get a lot of information, but say, I'm getting all this information, but this one area is where I really want to knock out and make sure I accomplish that by the end of practice. And that's how it's done.
Boy, you got that young group of wide receivers, a young quarterback. Well, how important is it for Chad Haney and Cecil Shorts to really to take them and say, hey, look, here's how what we got to do, you know, to lead them, to show them the right way of how things are done once you get off the practice field? Because, you know, Gus, one of the things that I learned when I was a player, and I learned probably the greatest lesson of all from Ronnie Lott, and Ronnie Lott told me, he said, you think you've studied enough. He said, and then go back and spend more time in. And then after you think you've done enough that second time, he said, go back and study it again and then start researching the coaches and understand what their tendencies are. I mean, he was a guy that taught me that. And for young guys, they don't understand that yet.
Right. And you know what? It's so important because, and then you need someone to teach them that. You know, you were fortunate enough to be around a Ronnie Lott. But, those guys that do that, I just believe they have a deep, deep passion for football. I mean, you got to love football in order to do what Ronnie Lott does. And that's what we're trying to build here, is get guys in here that love football. And then just, really learn the way how to do that. And that comes from our veterans. You know, it's all important. A guy like Sherrod Martin is. You know, he's been a pro, been playing for quite a while. To bring him in here and help with that development is huge.
Right, one of the best parts about staying extra and watching more film, Ronnie used to encourage that as a group. You know, so he'd say, hey, you know, as a defense, hey, let's watch some more film together, and then we'll do it together. And then after that, if you guys want to break up into different position groups, that's fine.
Yeah, I want to know, how did you handle that, Logs? I mean, you were, a defensive end.
I handled it.
You were like, what in the world?
How could I not handle it good? Because, you know, Ronnie would actually pay out of his own pocket. He would have a dinner catered one night every week and would bring in, you know, whoever, soul food, whatever. And we'd have a big spread. And everybody would get their food, and we would all sit down and we'd watch film and then sit in your position groups. And to me, I thought that was one of the coolest things in the world. You know, and I wasn't a young guy at that time. I mean, I was, fourth, fifth year, something of that nature. So I'm not an old guy or some kind of age veteran. But, I mean, that impressed the heck out of me that he took the gumption and the lead to be able to say, hey, guys, here's what we need to do to help us get better.
Well, that's the, you know, the veteran leadership, how important it is. And you've heard me talk before on the levels of competitor. That truly is the highest level, a dominant competitor, where he's internally driven. He wants to be the best at his position. And then he positively influences those around him. And that's what Ronnie Lott sounds like. And I believe that you can develop guys. They have that drive, but sometimes they just need to be shown the way. And it's that little extra. That's what we've been talking about this week. It's the little extra. Not that you have to be Superman, but we do put the little extra time in the watching tape, a little extra time lifting, a little extra time taking care of your body. Do the little extra. And that's been our challenge this week for our team.
All right, we come back here on the Gus Bradley Show. I want to ask you about some of the defensive changes and what you expect out of them. And we'll do that right here on the Gus Bradley Show, and you're listening to Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
This segment of the Gus Bradley Show is brought to you by Beards Jewelry at the St. John's Town Center, where exceptional is affordable. We're going to open up some phone lines here in a little bit, but first, want to talk about the defense. Gus, this is your side of the ball. I mean, your specialty. It's a veteran side of the ball. Where is the fix needed the most? Is it personnel? Is it just scheme? Is it responsibilities within scheme? Easiest way to describe it for listeners out there.
Well, it's... You know, I would say it comes back to responsibility. And, you know, the coaches, the players, we're all together on this. But, you know, in football, if you have one person break down, you know, it might make 8-9 yards, and then someone else will be there to capture it. But, you know, and sometimes those things are happening to us, but they're happening at critical times, a 3rd and 12, and they get 13 yards because we messed up or missed assignment or, you know, something that took place where we missed a tackle. And I think it's, you know, the really good teams, when I think when you're playing really at a high level, you might see, you know, one mistake here, a mistake there. They occur on the tape and on the field. But I think that, you know, we're at, it's, you know, one guy here, one guy here. And what happens is it filters over to where if 9 guys are doing it right, they have anxiety because they're saying, what's going on? This play should be stopped. And, you know, it creates anxiety in the other players. And then when that happens, all of a sudden a guy tries to do too much. So it's just a calming them down and really, you know, the accountability to one another to do your job and do what you're responsible for and trust. And, you know, that's what we're going through right now, and it's that accountability part of it.
It's kind of interesting in that from talking to some of the people around town earlier this week, you know, they want to bring up intensity, okay? And, boy, this team just wasn't ready didn't come out ready to play. And my explanation is that, you know, like you talked about, if you have 10 guys doing it right and then one guy who's trying to do it right – and giving you everything he's got, that he's got in his physical makeup, but if mentally he messes up, and a play breaks out, it makes all 11 look bad, and then all of a sudden, then the impression is, well, boy, they didn't come out. They came out flat. They weren't right. Ready to play.
Yeah, you draw general perceptions. It is, you know, a classic example. And believe me, I haven't talked to anybody up in Seattle, but. You know, we get every game, so you kind of watch it. And that last drive, what Denver scored in 49 seconds, you know, and they say, what took place? I mean, this is one of the top defenses in the league. And, well, all 4 plays, they attacked one individual. And all the other 10 guys were doing things right, but that one guy, Peyton Manning, found him, and he attacked him 4 times, and they went, 80 yards in 49 seconds. Mm-hmm. And it could be a feeling of, what's going on? This has never happened to us. What's, you know, and it creates anxiety in the other 10 guys because one guy's not doing his job. And that's what happens. That happens around the league. And so we've got to calm that anxiety down and just say, hey, listen, you continue to do what you're doing. You know, you guys over here, we'll get this right. And, you know, and really, you know, really capture it for the guys and really the guys that aren't doing it right, hold them accountable. and say, hey, it's not, you're not just holding, we're not holding accountable to us as coaching staff, it's your teammates now. They're counting on you to be where you're supposed to be.
So who's that one guy?
We had I'm not gonna say it was one guy. I mean, we had, you know, everybody takes responsibilities, and if you had asked our players, they'd say, hey, we're all responsible.
I wasn't asking for the one guy with your team. I'm talking about the one guy in on the Seattle Seahawks.
I'm not even gonna say that.
So I gotta
go
Well, you make some changes along the defensive front. JT Thomas is going to be inserted at the auto position. Josh Evans is going to play safety, and that's nothing new for Josh. I mean, Josh got a lot of snaps last year at the safety spot. JT, this is a little different for him, or is it?
Well, he got some reps there in OTAs, and we were looking at him and seeing how he would perform there. And then, you know, he kind of played all the way around. He had a hamstring injury, so that held us back a little bit. But we just felt like at the end, last preseason game and going into the season, you know, where he was at, we felt good about Leroy and Dakota. We felt like we could develop those guys. But really probably at the end of preseason, JT was playing, you know, as one of the best three or best four. And so we felt like, okay, let's take a look at him there now and see how he would respond. He's really worked himself up to this position and has earned the opportunity. And again, it's, you know, I don't really have, or Coach Babich or defensive staff doesn't really have a doghouse. It's more of a, hey, take this time, regroup, refocus, and let's get you back in alignment as far as what you need to do to be successful on the field. And if they show that, a player's going to have the opportunity to get back in the field. Josh Evans, classic example. You know, here, Winston Guy played pretty well, OTAs and training camp. Josh just really worked hard all the way through, and now he has his opportunity. And, you know, we'll see how he handles it.
You know, you made this creative name for that position, Otto, okay, in the offseason. Did it change the responsibilities of the position, redefine that position, or was it just by name alone?
No, it redefined that position.
Okay, so even you could say then that maybe a JT Thomas last year, because he played weak side linebacker, probably played some of the exact same things that he played that he's playing or going to be playing now at the auto position.
It really is. That's a great pickup on that. He did some of the techniques. He just didn't do all of them. Now, you know, being the auto, he's doing all of them. So he has a little bit different travel rules with the defense. So there is some learning there, a little bit different techniques, what we ask of him. But, you know, when you're a good linebacker, you know, hopefully when you play, it's a lot of your instincts. You know, I think, and JT's got really good instincts.
All right, we come back here on the Gus Bradley Show. I want to ask you, Coach, how Paul Posluszny is doing with his ankle, and we'll do just that here on the Gus Bradley Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
For single game tickets or season tickets, to learn more about being a Jaguars 365 member, call 904-633-2000 or visit Jaguars.com. Back on the Gus Bradley Show, Jeff Logman here with the head coach. And Gus, Paul Posluszny during the game missed a couple snaps, had his ankle taped up kind of for the remainder of that game. How's he doing?
Much better today. You know, he sat out of practice yesterday and, you know, went through all the drill work and all his repetitions. And, you know, just talking to him real quickly after practice, he felt a lot better.
Is there anything that he can't fight through?
I mean, the guy is. He was incredible. You know, just, I mean, it's not just an in-season deal for him. I mean, he takes care of his body, goes through the whole – that's year-long for him, and a true pro.
All right, let's open up some phone lines here. And I think Adam has a great question for you, Gus. Good evening, Adam.
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Good. Adam, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Hey, I got a question. We've had trouble, you know, covering a tight end. What do you have planned this week to stop the Chargers tight end? I mean, they have a couple.
Right. Yeah, they're very good. And you're right. You know, and you look back and you see some of the tight ends, and some of it are blown coverages, and, you know, that's a start. Let's not blow a coverage. The other thing is, you know, you see some guys that are playing tight coverage and they're making some plays. But, you know, I think it's, you know, as you go back and look at, there's, you know, you can – take a look at all the opportunities they've had and point it in a couple directions. But you're right, we're similar as far as our style of defense in Seattle. And then what? Gates had seven targets, seven receptions, and three touchdowns.
Three touchdowns against
them. And, there's some certain things that you try to do, with our tight ends, and we'll have to implement. At the same time, like a Pierre Garçon, he was leading the league and, 10 catches a game, and his numbers went way down when we played him, but some of the tight end numbers are climbing. So we've got to address, and sometimes it's difficult in zone coverages because it's based on, the release or what routes they're running, who's solely responsible for it. So I think we got to have an eye on Gates this whole week.
We actually look at a play like that on Film Room Friday at Jaguars.com tomorrow. So you can check it out there, folks. All right, let's go talk to Saqib on the south side. Good evening, Saqib.
Hey guys, how you doing? Hey, what's up, Coach?
Good. How are you doing, Saqib?
Hey man, I'm excited about Blaine. I'm excited about my new quarterbacks, and let me ask you
Blake.
About the defense.
Blake.
Yeah, I just got off from work. I apologize.
That's all right.
Or we can call him blocking.
Had a long day. And let me ask you about. I counted 11 missed tackles in the first half on that game. Can you explain to me? Is it a mental thing, or how do they these professional athletes miss the tackle
sure.
as many as we do?
It's a good question. You know what? In preseason, you work on it, and we have a technique, how we teach tackling and how, whether it's a close quarter tackle, an open field tackle, a sideline tackle, and and the players have been doing a good job about it. And then it's the same question we have as a staff and as the players. They get into a situation, it's high intensity, they're coming down so fast, and at times you go, what what happened to the technique? Why did you go away from it? And how to do it, but, in the heat of the battle, split-second decision, and I think it's just continual repetition of it, and, becomes a habit, and they really trust it. But, we're inconsistent at times, and far too many tackles. It should be, at least in the single digits.
It's amazing how much better tackling can be, too, when awareness of plays and angles and everything else. And sometimes, sometimes people think that tackling is just the last 2 to 3 yards of the play. But sometimes it's not with an individual on defense.
It can be. I attribute it to this, too. Sometimes, it's okay, we're at home. We're all jacked up. We're all hyped up. Here's my opportunity to make a big splash play. I'm going to, come up and make a big hit, and I'll really get everything going. And they come in there, and, that doesn't work all the time. And it's like, no. Just go back. And trust it now. Just you don't have to do that. And some players get caught up in that. And that part is a process, just to settle down and stay true to the teachings.
It's amazing how the mind can make tackling better. And I bring this up. The first third down of the game against Indianapolis, where you have Winston Guy Jr., and it's a 3-under-3 deep zone. And he really had an opportunity to make a tackle for only about 4 or 5 yards. If a little bit better awareness, a little bit more eye discipline and reaction, instead of having to make maybe an open field tackle, all of a sudden he's making a tackle before the offensive player even gets around, turned around with the ball at all.
Right. Well, and and players are aggressive. And believe me, we like aggressive players. But I think if aggressiveness, causes – it becomes a detriment or hurts the team, that's that fine line, and players got to learn that. And we have a group, their heart and soul is into this team and helping us be at a certain level, but at times you can get caught up in it, and it's that consistency that is so important to a team.
All right, we come back, we'll talk a little bit of Chargers here on the Gus Bradley Show on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
All right, do we want to take some phone calls here before we talk a little bit of the San Diego Chargers? Let's do that. Give the folks an opportunity to ask a question, and let's start right off with Dave, and Mannern's got a question about rebuild. Good evening, Dave.
Hey, good evening, guys. How we doing?
Good. How you doing?
Doing real well, man. Doing real well. I've been a season ticket holder pretty much since day one. I wasn't able to get them this year, but I will make every game. But working on our third generation now with my one-year-old grandson. But Coach Gus, it's a pleasure to have you here, man. You're quite the inspiration, and we really appreciate it from the fan base that you're so open and honest with everyone. This team, in my eyes, is an extremely young core group of guys, and just the learning curve that they're going through day by day, you can just kind of see them gelling together. So I know we're still building, and I know it's going to be a wonderful end to this thing. But my question, Coach, is with Bortles. Now, your playbook must be unbelievably thick, and I'm just wondering, are there certain plays that he doesn't feel comfortable running that he's kind of X'd out of the playbook right now that'll run down the road? Are there certain schemes that he's wanting to put in there and this, that, and the other? And thanks again for taking my call, and I'll listen to you off the air.
Great question.
Yes,
there,
great question. I appreciate the comments. Yes, there is. You know, we do have an extensive playbook. And then, first of all, you try to find out what are Blake's strengths, what really helped him be successful, and our team's strengths. And then, you know, you go against a team like San Diego, and you look at some things the way you want to attack them, and you come up with a playlist. And maybe it's, you know, 40 passes, 25 runs, whatever the case. And then you go through it all with Blake and Chad, and Blake goes through it, and he said, you know what, I'm not comfortable with this play, with this play, with this play, and with this play. And he might highlight them and take them out. And then you go through practice, and he'll say, you know what, there's a couple other ones that I'm not comfortable with, and you X those out. And, you know, it's great conversation. And then all of a sudden you get a bunch of plays where he feels really comfortable about. And then, you know, some of those must-have situations, hey, I really like these plays. They're in my comfort level. I like how it feels when I'm back there. And that's kind of how you come up with a game plan. So it starts off big, but it pares down pretty quickly by the end of the week.
It was pretty interesting because on Wednesday, your offensive coordinator, Jed Fish, met with the media and talked specifically about that. And they posted that on Jaguars.com as a video, and it's entitled, Blake Has the Last Pin. And so what you're talking about is that, you know, Blake could even take plays off of the game plan as late as Saturday night or Sunday morning, because it's all about, and it's not because he's a rookie, it's because any quarterback, you guys probably feel, should have the right to feel comfortable with what he's going to run.
Sure. You know what? And there's a lot of quarterbacks. Phillip Rivers, he calls the majority of the game at the line. And he has full autonomy of that and autonomy. And he, you know, they'll talk it over as a coaching staff, but he controls it. And he gets into plays. He likes to call, and he knows the situation and thinks on the same page as the coaches. Well, we're not there yet, but we can do it ahead of time. We know the situations we're going to make these calls. He feels comfortable, so instead of him having to make that decision, we make it for him. But, you know, we're all about the players got to own it. It's that much more powerful if the players own the team. And I say that with all humility. It's, you know, we understand we got to make decisions, we got to hold people accountable. But when they own it, they feel really good about what's taking place. You know, they just rally around it. And that's, I think, you know, behind the whole situation with the quarterbacks being able to have the last opportunity to highlight things out.
So does Jed ever go back to Blake and say, you know, you highlighted this one right here and said you didn't like it, but you know, hey, look, this is a great play. Just trust me.
I'm sure
it's a great play.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a little bit of that going on, but you know, or maybe you don't like this one, but I'm sure you like this one. You know, but no, I think, you know what, communication is so important, and you know, and the players respect the whole this coaching staff and the offensive side, and the meetings with Jed and Frank are so valuable, and I you know, the whole idea is that for they come out and they feel good about it.
All right, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show, folks, and when we come back, we'll open it up for a few more phone calls, and you're listening to the Gus Bradley Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And welcome back, and let's go ahead here on the Gus Bradley Show, open it up for a few phone calls. We got two more that we can take, I think. We'll start with Andrew at the beach. Good evening, Andrew.
Hey, guys. Don't let Logs fool you. He was really watching hunting and fishing videos on the side when they were catering.
All right, Andrew.
I'm busted.
Yeah, no doubt about that.
No, I'm not. But I wanted to highlight what makes the Jaguar special for me right now. It's the high touch. I heard on your show that Tyler Wolf does the music. I sent him an email. I said, hey, why don't you play these old breakdancing songs, you know, to mess with the guys a little bit. He writes me back, goes, I'll work those in. And that's awesome. Dave Cole writes me a letter back when I gave a character reference for Blake Bortles. You're not going to get that with any other team. Shad Khan takes a photo with my son because he was wearing a Tebow jersey, and Shad goes, let me start signing his jersey before I start signing his checks. You're not going to get that anywhere. And the special moment that I shared with my son was when Blake Bortles came in. My son gave me a high five, and when Blake made some mistakes, my son, 11-year-old Bryce, telling me, don't worry, he's a rookie. He's going to make those mistakes. That's what's important. And me and Bryce are going to be watching that game this Sunday, and we're going to do it Alan Hearn style.
Oh, man. You knew that was coming,
No, you
huh?
did, yeah, because you could feel the building towards that.
Yeah. I like the comment about you, Logs. He must know you real well.
Yeah, he's probably been around me a time or two.
No, we really appreciate those comments, and it is. And, you know, I think from the start we've said, let's be as transparent as possible. Let's be open, you know, and we talk about really commit to our following and connect with our following and let them go on this journey with us. And it can't be a sometime thing. And we said, hey, when we're excited, you're excited. When we're hurt, our fans will hurt. And, we've got to get that excitement. And but we appreciate all our fan base.
All right, so this week, a West Coast trip. Many people always say that when you travel across the country, it can be challenging. Sometimes you go across the country, it can be better. I mean, teams spend a little bit more time together, but either way, you guys are going to be facing a quarterback who's one of the hottest in the league, in Phillip Rivers, and it doesn't seem to matter who he's thrown the ball to. He finds an open guy.
Yeah, he does. He is playing at a high level. Some would say he's playing the best at the quarterback position in the NFL. And, a great challenge for us. And I think our team, you know, we're at the point where, you know, we've talked about compete anywhere, anytime. Well, it just happens to be San Diego. And I'm really excited to see, you know, can we get better? Can we get better through this? And I felt like last week there was times we didn't get better. And, we got to get back on that track. And our offensive line got better. Receivers got better. Defensively, I believe, you know, there's no doubt in my mind that we can play better, and we will. And, that's the challenge for us. And then let's see what takes place once we do that.
I got a lot of respect for Phillip Rivers. And the reason why, I think he's one of the ultimate competitors. I mean, you get the impression of watching that guy that if he were playing – tic-tac-toe, that he would want to beat you every time.
Yeah, he is a fierce competitor.
Yeah.
Had the opportunity to compete, you know, against his offenses, and just a strong competitor, and will wins, you know, through his, all of his years of experience.
All right, when we come back here on the Gus Bradley Show, we want to talk about what Blake Bortles will face in that San Diego Chargers defense, and we'll do that right here on the Gus Bradley Show on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show. It's the last segment and last opportunity, Gus, for us to talk about the San Diego Chargers and what Blake Bortles may face. What kind of a defense does San Diego have, and what kind of a system do they run, and what challenges will that present for a young quarterback?
Well, they operate under a 3-4 system, but in passing situations, you'll see them get to a 4-3 style of defense. So their secondary is very impressive. I think guys have really grown in their system, you know, with Wright and Eric Weddle and Brandon Flowers. Those guys have got some years of experience, and they've kind of gelled together. Jason Verrett, you know, the new corner, the rookie corner, very talented.
He's really good.
Yeah,
he
is. When he came out, really some short area quickness, very athletic. So they've kind of gelled together. Their linebacking crew, although Manti Te'o's been hurt.
I think he's got a foot injury again.
Right.
Not the same one that he hurt last year, but a different one.
The linebacking crew is really solid. And then Corey Legit, he is legit. And yeah. A very good player. So Dwight Freeney, I mean, how can you argue against his, you know, his experience and what he's done in his career? So very talented. And I think, you know, over the years they've really moved up in their rankings. And now, you know, they're playing with a lot of experience.
When you were a defensive coordinator, how was your approach with a young quarterback like – if you were facing Blake?
Well, I would think that, you know, we expect to see a lot of pressure. They've shown pressure in past games, and that's not going to change now. So, you know, I think we expect to see a lot of pressure from first and second down, you know, in some different situations. Then on third down, some tight coverage. So that's what we're anticipating seeing.
From what I've seen, it looks like they play a lot of man coverage behind that pressure. And for a young quarterback, hey, you know, throw it in there. You know, find a guy that might have a step or two, because in the preseason it looked like Blake could throw into those little small spots against man.
Sure. Well, he'll have his opportunity this week.
Yeah, he's going to have plenty of opportunity. All right, thank you, Gus. Folks that are in Jacksonville, just stay tuned, because J.P. Shadrick and Tony Baselli are stepping in. Everybody else, talk to you same time, same place next week.